best seat in the house. Welcome into the front row of the Utah Jazz. I'm your host, Holly Rowe, and we have co-owner Ashley Smith. Thank you for joining us today. This is fun. Hi.
Thanks for having me. This is so fun.
This is exciting. You know, Women's History Month is a big initiative for the Utah Jazz, and you are currently, right now, making history.
It's exciting and cool, but also I'm just like on a path of growth and along for the ride with Ryan, and we love Utah and this organization. So it's just cool that there's kind of a double layer there.
It is beautiful. You guys have a co-ownership. Like, you are truly partners in every sense of the word on so many different layers. How does that show up in the Jazz ownership?
Well, it's been a blast, to be honest. And I don't think we had expectations of how it would go, but we both spent a lot of years kind of doing our own thing and building our own businesses and being massive champions of each other. But now it's really fun to come together on the places where it aligns within the organization. So we have strengths in completely different areas, which is what makes our marriage work and our friendship work. And it's totally making this work too, as we work together. And we know where to lay off. We know where to lean in. We know when we need the other. And it's incredible. And you can't even plan for that. So
I think the kids say hashtag goals, relationship goals. Like, that really is what a lot of people are trying to get to in their partnerships, both at work and, you know, at home. That's really beautiful. You said you both have your strengths and weaknesses. What does being a co-owner of the Jazz look like? Like, what strengths are you bringing?
I mean, Ryan's such a big picture, fast mover, like, let's go, let's go, let's go. And I'm definitely more of a slow, thoughtful, what's the longer road? What's around the corner? And so I think we just kind of catch each other's blind spots a lot in that way. But I mean, yeah, we just have different roles. There's different things that we do. He's into operations. He's into like being in with the people every day. And that doesn't work for me and my current setup, but I'm able to come in and feel a part of things and have a role and have a voice and be seen and build connections and learn from people and in all of those ways. So it's just a beautiful, it's really beautiful. And I would have never dreamed we'd end up working together and in such different but collaborative ways.
That's really cool. You know, this is new. You've been here for 3 years as owners of the Utah Jazz. And Gail Miller is part of that journey and, you know, really was instrumental. I know you look up to her quite a bit. What has she taught you, or what example has she set for you as you embark on this new journey?
Yeah, well, Gail is the journey. I mean, Gail is the only reason this journey is happening. And I do adore her. I come to tears even thinking about her, talking about her, because she is so special to us. And I think what Gail and Larry built was just a really, really special thing in our state. And we thought it was special before, but now to have like lifted up the hood and start meeting everyone and understanding how this organization runs and the values and the morals that people are hired based on. I mean, it's just been a really cool experience, and that all comes from Gail. And what I love about her personally is you know who she is. She wears it on her sleeve. You meet her, you know what she's about. You know what's important to her. And she does what she says she's going to do, and then bigger. And the things that she values are where she puts her efforts. And it never stops. She doesn't ever stop. And I just think she's inspirational. And I am so thankful to have been able to learn from her every opportunity I can, and to be able to even be in this organization she built. I'm just learning from her leadership.
You know, this is a cool story. So Gail had a scholarship program, and my sister received one of her scholarships and became the first female student body president at Salt Lake Community College. And Gail paid for her schooling and her leadership opportunities. So like, my family, my life has been impacted by Gail Miller's leadership. And it makes me want to cry too, because it's just women empowering other women is rare and beautiful. And I think that's something really cool to lean into. Now I'm crying. Don't make me cry.
It's getting Gail. Gail can make us all cry.
Gail's making us all cry. Oh my gosh, she's so beautiful. Fans often see you and Ryan and your five children. You have five children, which often blows my mind. You're at the games. You're with the players. They're so engaged. Tell us, how does like your life revolve around the Utah Jazz and sports?
I mean, it's very unpredictable, and the worst thing we've learned we can do is have any expectations of how things should go. And that's okay, because we're also fly by the seat of our pants type people. So it's working all right. But yeah, we did not know what to expect coming into this. There's no playbook. There's no way to do it right. So we're just taking every day at a time. But the kids are a really big, important part of this for us. And what they're learning, because there are sacrifices to taking on a stewardship like this. And so we also need to really enhance and grasp onto the learning moments and make sure that they're understanding the bigger picture and that it's not just all about basketball, and that the platform of this organization and the NBA is an incredible platform that is doing incredible things. And we want them to see us working and sweating and grinding and frustrated and disappointed. And because hopefully that'll offset some of the sacrifice, but also some of, you know, the entitled and privileged moments that they're getting as well.
Right. So. Like, it's real life. There's really cool stuff that comes along with that. You know, like, I see your little boys out there shooting baskets with the players, and I'm like, this is so cool for them. I hope they appreciate how cool this is. But it comes with hard work and sacrifice, like you're talking about. One of the things that you use that word stewardship. This is a huge responsibility. You know, the Jazz to me are the front porch of Utah. You know, I've been everywhere in the world, and I say I'm from Utah, and they say, oh, Utah Jazz. I was in Greece on a boat ramp, Utah Jazz, you know, wherever I am. What responsibility does that come with, that stewardship? That's an interesting word that you use.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel heavy, so that's great. But it definitely feels like we have goals and there's purpose. And as much as Ryan wants to have a parade, it is way bigger than that. And so the responsibility is kind of really exciting and hopeful, and it makes it worth it. It makes it doable. It wouldn't be without it. So without the responsibility, it was just kind of the nuance of being an NBA owner or being involved in the NBA or winning. And so the responsibility part is what makes it 100% worth it and everything.
Mm. Yeah, I've seen other owners in the league that they're just the owners. You guys are taking this as a, you know, we're investing in this community. It feels different. Is that fair to say?
Yes, for sure. I mean, that's what it's about. It is about Utah and bringing people together and uniting people and loving each other around this common thing of basketball, that hopefully we get some wins, yeah. You know, and a parade.
Yes, yeah. all the things that are so good. 3 years in, what's something that has surprised you about being in the ownership in the NBA? You get to be around all the other owners. You get to hear what the issues are. Like, what's something that you're like, wow, that's really cool?
Yeah, I think I was not aware of quite how much good the NBA is doing. I was very naive to how much good they were doing. And I knew we had been to many All-Star games, and, you know, we were associated with the patch. We knew the good that was happening, but on such a minimal level. And the people that I've met and the drive that they have to do good and make change and help people be seen and heard, it's just been really surprising and really exciting and really motivating. And I'm proud. I'm proud to be a part of the bigger NBA program, and I'm really proud to be a Utahn, because also our organization specifically, I've now been able to see it stands out, and it does, and we hear that, but now I can see it. And so I'm proud to be from Utah. I'm from a community that loves each other, and I just didn't know that I was going to get all this pride in the NBA and all this pride in Utah that I already had, but I just was very unaware of how big that would feel and how exciting it would be.
It is. There's a lot of pride. I think the other cool part of your story is why basketball? You know, this basketball love seems to be a theme running through your family. I met your dad on the road at one of the games. Why basketball? That's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it happened very organically for us. My dad was a massive jazz fan growing up, and he has really cool stories about, I mean, the day that he heard on the radio that the team was moving from New Orleans to here, and he pulled over to cry because he is such a big basketball fan. And so I was raised with that. But when Ryan and I got married, we just somehow we started going to BYU basketball games. That was just what we did. As newlyweds, it was kind of something to do, and sports unite us. At the end of the day, they do. And so it just became this important thread to us. And then as we had kids, that continued to grow, and we got more involved with the BYU team and would travel with them and met the players. And that's when I started to see the bigger picture, that it is so much more than basketball. And so then fast forward to the opportunity we had to be a part of the Jersey Patch with the Utah Jazz. And then the Utah Jazz became such a big part of our family. So it was just this unifying thing from right when we got married. And then it just grew and grew and grew. And it's just beautiful. I mean, as you were saying that, I was kind of getting teary-eyed because it is really important to us. It's so important to me now. And it's such a bigger deal than a ball going in a net.
We're sitting in this beautiful studio that you've built. And you talk about the lessons of basketball, but I think competition and being good at something and setting goals, how is kind of your spirit here of your dance studio and what you've built part of that?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how they align because they're both definitely just about who we're becoming along the way. I definitely can't talk about the dance studio without emotion because it really is about creating an environment for youth and myself and my other coworkers where we all get to come just try and be a better version of ourselves than we were the day before. And the vehicle is dancing, which is this incredible art form where we get to emote. And similarly, like I watched Jordan Clarkson run a beautiful play and it's art.
It really is.
Art to him. And I know he gets to emote in his own ways through basketball. And so not only is it unifying, but it's just a vehicle to grow and be better. And we find these things we love and have passion about, and we get to feel and emote and be who we are, but then we get to get better along the way. I don't know what's better than that. And so the fact that it's basketball and dance for me, it's beautiful, and they're so similar that no one understands, but they are, and they're really close to my heart. And the growth that they're bringing my family and the opportunities that both dance and basketball have created for us to unite and get closer and have hard conversations and have good conversations and celebrations and disappointments. They're just these cool vehicles for all of those things.
I love that, like the parallel and the symmetry. You know, as we're talking about dance and what you've built here, I kind of love this story of you started your dance studio in your basement. How have you found this entrepreneurial spirit to build something so special? This is one of the biggest dance studios in the Western United States, and and you built that in your basement.
And that is crazy. And that just happens one day at a time. But we are, like, to our cores, Ryan and I, which is one thing that really brings us together, we are just growth-oriented people. And we like to do better. And we almost like to fail because then you get another chance to do better.
Because you tried something hard, right?
Yes.
That's part of it.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean it feels good. So I'm not trying to say that it's easy or feels good. But we definitely kind of like, after the fact, being like, oh, it was rad that was a nightmare because then I did A, B, or C. We both just have that spirit in us. So as Ryan was, you know, trying to get Qualtrics off the ground, I was doing another job in Salt Lake that I didn't have really passion around. It was what I studied, but it wasn't where my passion was. And he kind of saw that. And Ryan was the one who was like, let's turn our basement into a dance studio and you should just teach little girls in the neighborhood, because I had spent some time a lot of time teaching up until that point, and also, you know, earning credentials in different forms of dancing. So he was like, go do what you love. And it just happened to be in our basement because it was open. I mean, we didn't ever intentionally think, we didn't think about it at the time, like we're both in our basements, but now we look back and we laugh. But he was just a big champion of me being happy. And me, at the end of the day, being able to come home and have as much energy as he did for what I did all day. So it started that way, and never was there any intention that it would turn into something big. It was kind of just fun.
It's beautiful, in the beginning. It's so beautiful. You know, you've talked a little bit about Ryan being your biggest champion. I think for women listening out there, I know for myself, Utah is a patriarchal society in a lot of ways. You know, there's a culture here for lots of different reasons, but Ryan seems to really support you. How has that evolved?
I mean, it's definitely been a path. He was my biggest champion then, but as it got bigger in our basement, and as he pulled in from a long day to a cul-de-sac full of cars and kids everywhere and music blaring throughout the house, there were lots of tension points. And there were many moments where he didn't see the value anymore, or it didn't feel worth it to him. And I had to remind him, hey, this is about my growth too. And this is about me doing something as well, and me having passion, and me growing and figuring out who I am. Because that's actually part of the problem for me with whether it's Utah culture or America, or the world, that women aren't always encouraged to know who they are and like dig deep and know what you love and what makes you you and what's great about you, because we are kind of channeled to like make sure everybody else is good.
Right.
And also that's great. With Ryan, I had to say, hey, I need you to still be a champion of me. Even in these hard moments, I need you to love this and I need you to figure it out. And he heard me and he listened, and it wasn't easy, and we still continue to push. But there was definitely a moment where we were out in public somewhere and some little girl came running up to me, Miss Ashley, and he kind of had a moment of, oh, you have this identity, this person who you get to be and who you love, who you've created, and he saw that and he wanted it. And he wanted it for me. So having me point out those moments, having me force those moments and remind him, but that's not easy.
It's hard to ask for what you need. So yeah, I think that I call myself a reformed people pleaser. Like yes. I'm in my 50s and I'm trying to figure out how can I ask for what I need. You know, part of our Women's History Month theme is called For Her. And I think what I'm learning as I've gotten older is I have to ask for what I need so I can be good for everybody else. You know, that's part of how I look at that is I'm better if I'm getting filled up and living my passions and doing the things I need. How do you kind of look at For Her, and what can that mean for other women in Utah?
For sure, I agree. And I think that I am better when I like me. And I didn't like me for a lot of years. And I didn't know I didn't like me. I didn't know that's what was happening. And so I think we have to be teaching our youth and our daughters, and this is new information, right? Like people didn't know that's what we needed. But yeah, when I like me, then I want to be brave. Then when I'm fearful, I want to be brave because I'm confident in that I am worth something. So I want to like me. And when the first time I heard the For Her thing, I got emotional because I went to like, it's for her, my 10-year-old self. And I don't know if that was anyone's intention, but that's where my brain went. Like, I owe it to her to like me because I didn't like her then, but I like her now. I like that version of her, and I love me now. So that's for me what it's about. It's like it's got to be for her, like the 10-year-old, the 18-year-old, the 30-year-old, the 43-year-old, whatever. That's what it's got to be for every version of us, and still loving those versions back there that that needed a lot of reform. And P.S., this version still needs a lot of reform.
We're all a work in progress. But I do love that, because if we love ourselves and we are feeling confident, because I think sometimes on the outside, people look at you, or they might look at me like, oh, you're on TV, you have it all. Oh, you've got it all. We're all trying to figure it out. Like,
yeah,
all of us are trying to figure
it out.
Right.
It doesn't serve anyone to think that someone has it all. It doesn't, like, or for me to try and pretend like I'm Superwoman. It serves no one, because I'm not, and I'm failing all the time, and I want to lean into failures and disappointments, which is not easy, and I have to remind myself. But yeah, like, it's just being able to be vulnerable and have our armor down, but still have boundaries so that we are taking care of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just all a hard line to toe. And I just think the more we're talking about it and reminding each other and championing each other, and hopefully every day as women, we're being more empowered and we want to try harder and try better and fail harder and fail better.
Right. But the word you use really sticks with me is we keep trying, right? Yeah. It's never going to be perfect. I think we have this idea that we have to be perfect as mothers and women and coworkers and all the things. All I can say is I'm going to keep trying and keep growing. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, of if we keep growing, then we'll do brave things. We'll go out there and try new things. We'll go out and try to do things that might not work, but then we get the right thing. So I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, Ryan and I we love Billy Joel together, and he has a song, Vienna. And we heard him once. It's on like a recording he did, and it's insane. He does a Q&A about all his songs. Anyway, about Vienna, he talks about peaking too early. So that became something Ryan and I would talk about peaking too early and not wanting our kids to peak too early. And then recently we were having a conversation and I said, Ryan, we don't ever want to peak. Like, why do we talk about peaking too early? No, we should never peak. Like, we just have to keep going. And we might have days where we're headed down, but like, as long as overall we are just continuing on this upward trajectory, like that's all we want. So I don't know.
No, we're sitting in front of Mount Timpanogos, and it's this big, steep, steep climb to get up there. But then it's this long, beautiful mountain range. You can stay up there, and you can be up on that peak and keep going. You know, it's a beautiful kind of visual. What are some of the tools that you have gathered through your life as a co-owner in the NBA, as a successful businesswoman here in Utah? What tools do you think other women can tap into, because you're learning them yourself? We've just talked about this. Give us some ideas of, if I wish I knew this then, but I know it now, what are some tools that we can give to others?
Well, kind of like I said before, but trying to love ourselves, allowing ourselves to love ourselves and fighting for it. And which leads me to my next biggest tool, is that the biggest fight I fight is with my head all day, every day. And my students know this. Lots of people hear me. Like, I have this phrase that I say, first thought, second thought. And it is just this constant battle. But that tool, since I learned it 15 years ago, is when someone said that to me. And that tool has changed who I am. It's giving myself the grace of, my first thought doesn't have to be right. And it can be wrong, and it can even be horrible. And I have the option and the autonomy, and I have the ability and I have the desire to get to better thoughts and to a better version of me. And that's just a continuous fight. So that's a huge tool.
First thought, second thought.
Yes, first thought, second thought for me. And another tool that's kind of newer in my life is being aware of my own energy and the things that really build it and the things that really drain it. And whether it's trying to keep those drains out completely, or time them, or make sure I book in my life time after I know it's going to be an energy drain to recover. And that is something that I really was incorrect about, thinking that I just had to go, 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 and I had to keep going, and I had to not sleep and keep fighting and do all the unhealthy things because that was how you progress. That faulty thinking hurt me. And so that tool of allowing myself to control my energy and to be aware of the things that affect it. And then when I lose control of it, to have a game plan. And so it's just kind of awareness of doing too much or doing too little and how it affects us.
Yes, as a reformed people pleaser, I've learned how to say no to people, and it's really hard because I never want to disappoint anyone. Right. But by saying yes to everyone else, I was never saying yes to myself, and that's hard. And so I have to say—
Because then you can't be brave. Then you can't do hard things.
I don't have time to do what I want. Yes. So I'm saying no to other people sometimes so that I can say yes to me, and I think that's an important place. Okay, last thing, and we hit on this a little bit earlier, but there's an opportunity here, and we've talked about the stewardship of the Utah Jazz, but what lasting impact do you want to have on this Utah community through your ownership of the Utah Jazz?
Yeah, it's a very hard question. But I just hope that we can continue to make Utah a place where everybody feels seen and heard and loved. That's what Ryan and I are about. We're about youth, and we're about kindness, and we're about loving each other and coming together and building each other and allowing each other grace and growth. And so if there's any world where we help facilitate that for anyone in our state, then that's amazing. And that's a blessing to us and to our state and to each other, as in this community, we just keep fighting for each other.
You're an incredible woman. Don't ever fight those fights in your head. Just always be like, Holly Rowe thinks I'm awesome, because I do. But thank you so much. And we are lucky to have you and your stewardship for the Utah Jazz. Thanks
for having me. Yes. Same to you.
Thank you. All right. That's been The Front Row. And mic drop.